Well, it's 6:06, the 5th of November. Time is flying. And we've got, of course, a couple of holidays coming up. So just curious what your plans are. But anyway, just kind of reacting to this election. And it was, I don't know, in some ways kind of a little bit depressing. And then if you look at the mistakes that were made, which, you know, any campaign's going to have mistakes, but, you know, you could have had it with the how close the race was in a couple of the seats in city council. You could have literally a couple of newbies in there that were not representative of the PVA, Progressive Voter Alliance. And have a person in there that some people will claim is a carpetbagger, Mr. Eichmann and his lovely wife. I wonder if she's going to take over the microphone from him in the first meeting. You know, I was talking to somebody about the election yesterday, and it just seems like the GOP, doesn't it seem like the GOP in this town's on life support, or maybe in a coma, or maybe in, you know, hospice or something? I don't get it. You know, you don't run your own candidates, and then you try to get candidates through the Democratic side because you say to yourself, these are the only people that can win. But I mean, doesn't the GOP ever consider trying to like persuade anybody that they have the right ideas? It, you know, the two parties are a lot alike, as thousands of millions of people have noticed. So I don't even know if it matters, but there are individual people out there that do have different ideas that make all the difference. And I was thinking about this. I mean, driving down here today, I was thinking about how do you run a successful campaign on Reelect Me? The city's pretty good. It's doing pretty good. And then you realize it's one of the poorest cities in the country. And the taxes are, you know, skyrocketing. And I mean, how do you get past the symbolism of all the empty buildings, you know? So what does the town need? I don't know. I think what we need is a real dialogue from, you know, within the community itself, grassroots dialogue on how to grow the economy and how to make it a better city. And I do think laziness and indifference and ignorance all play a part in the results that we get, but that's got to be true across the country. So, you know, I mean, American population is fairly, I mean, there's regional differences, of course, but it's fairly similar because the national media is so pervasive. It's so powerful. So how you would update, you know, there's got to be cities our size that are just a lot more successful. And so what lessons could we learn from them? I mean, I find it hilarious that a Tea Party calls me up and blames me. Basically, it's my fault that certain people lost, people that didn't bother to come on the show until it was too late. It's my fault. That I found hilarious. I had to listen to that a few times. You know, that I'm blockading the important voices who don't happen to show up, but you know, it's my fault that they're, and it's my job to attack candidates and to slam them. And you know, if this, you know, that there is a public function to having a live radio show that's not music oriented. And if it's the only place in town, I don't see what we gain as a community if it's a very hostile place for half of half or arguably two thirds of the individuals who live in this city, you know? So anyway, just some thoughts. I do think, you know, people are saying we need better candidates. I think our candidates were fine, you know, but It would have been nice if, I mean, obviously, this is like the kind of the classic thing that you see come out of leftism. The left wants control, and they want control because deep down they know that people are not naturally do not naturally tend to support their ideas. They have to be kind of educated or propagandized into these ideas. So what they want is power, because through power they can make things happen. They're not truly represented. They're not, have no interest in representative government. What they believe is that they have the truth, and they're going to put it, they're going to put it forward with their power. And I think you see that on the city council. You see that in the county commission. And you see it in the mayor's office. And the people who tend to be the farthest to the left historically have turned out to be the least capable of leadership. And so who would I point my finger at? Obviously Stalin, Lenin, Mao. And, you know, if you ever say this to a person who's a progressive, liberal, whatever, they get very angry very quickly. Why is that? Because how dare you associate them with Stalin, for example. But what other group of eminent leaders have embraced these ideas that come out of leftism? Essentially various Marxist ideas, but there's a whole lot of writers in the history of Marxism that are encapsulated in this. It just so happens that Marxism is not true. How do we know that? Because it doesn't work. I mean, what else can you say? But they do get very upset when you bring these people up. But how else do you show that the ideas don't work and that the movement tends towards tyranny and that no level of failure seems to dissuade these people? Because obviously there's something very intoxicating about power. So we have a crappy city council, you know, and we know, how do we know that? Look at the job growth. I mean, the left treats economics as if it's kind of this weird appendage to everything else that's going on. While in the history of the West, we have seen that if you have a robust economy, everything else flows out of it. I mean, if you're an extremely impoverished community, how much representative government is there, you know? And the founding fathers were very, very enthusiastic about economics. Now, they were enthusiastic about a lot of things. But show me a community that has a negative opinion of capitalism, and I will show you a miserable place to live where people daydream about leaving and going someplace else. So, anyway, you know, there's this other idea out there that I think is worthwhile. People get, like, you know, I guess I grew up in a house where, you know, politics is one of the topics. It was kind of in the air that people talked about. But some people will argue that politics is not where the real change happens. Politics is where the temporary power resides. But if you want to change a society, for example, you know, historians will point to, for example, religious movements and science, scientific breakthroughs and revivals. And so you see the revivals that are occurring on the Eastern Seaboard before the American Revolution. And there's a lot of historians will say, unless you have these revivals, you don't have the American Revolution. And then look at the scientific revolutions that we've had and just the incredible technological breakthroughs, you know. And those things change society in profound ways. But I do think if you're holding out for politics to change everything for the better, you know, you're going to be waiting a long time. Although politics can obviously play a part. And this going back to this argument that I had with this guy who, anytime people start, and this guy told me that he had taught economics, macroeconomics, economics on a large scale. Anytime people start throwing the names of theories at me. I just, you know, I think economics is something that you've got to have some sort of observational, you know, there's got to be some level. If everything that you're talking about is based on a theory, it turns into global warming. I mean, you see on the ground that the earth is not heating up and cooking. You might see anomalies, weather anomalies. You might see, you know, a temperature record here, or you know, we've gotten an incredible amount of water that's come down in Texas in the last month. Who can prove that that's related to global warming? And we do have a phone call. Thanks for the call to the Kelly O'Connell Show. Who's this?
Kelly, this is Ralph.
Ralph, good morning.
I thought I'd call you early. Good morning to you.
Great. Good morning. How you doing?
Oh, pretty good. Say, Kelly, you said you come from a political family or came from a political family.
Well, just to straighten this out, I didn't come. Well, actually, yeah. It ended up my stepmom was elected to the state Senate in Nevada for like 20 years. But before this woman, who's really a very objectionable person, got involved in my family. My dad was interested in politics, and it was one of the things. My dad was this like phenomenally entertaining person who had certain political opinions. But, you know, our conversation wasn't dominated by that. It was just something that was kind of in the air, you know?
That's great, Kelly. My family also come from politics. I came from politics. My dad was chairman for the Democrats for 17 years. I remember when I was just tall enough to go ahead and take sample ballots and put them on the windshields of the cars or the doorknobs or mailboxes. I remember meeting a lot of congressmen, a lot of senators, governors, you name it.
So what values did your father instill in you in terms of politics?
I don't like it because I don't like running people down, like, as you well aware. That's what it consists of. Not only that, Kelly, I don't want to run your show down. Absolutely no way. I've been trying to extend it another hour. But a lot of times a politician will talk so much that he'll sink himself.
Yeah.
And I know for a fact that Gilbert and Gina lost at least 4 votes because what they were trying to do absolutely in good faith, in their opinion, their train of thought. Absolutely, Kelly. A lot of the people were not for that,
mm-hmm.
and they did not vote for them.
All right, give me an example. Give me an example, well, just so I can think about it. What did they mention that people were not behind?
They don't want Las Cruces to keep growing. They want it to go back the way it used to be. And I guess it's mostly the old-timers like myself. And I myself, Kelly, have been to New York City, the East Hamptons. I worked out of Ryan Aeronautical in San Diego, so I'm used to, and I lived in Albuquerque, worked Pierce, and I know the big cities. And you don't want to live there. That's why I moved back to Las Cruces after I retired.
Yeah.
Now, a lot of old-timers aren't enthused about that, and they don't want their kids to live in big cities. They want to keep this Las Cruces like it used to be maybe 50, 60 years ago, which is impossible. And they're not all for filling up all these empty buildings. And a lot of that, they mean well. You know, Kelly, I try to buy 2 26-inch tires here in Las Cruces, and I couldn't find them. They had to bring them from El Paso. It was a fly-by-night outfit. They didn't know how to take them. They couldn't take them off. The car stayed there a day and a half. The tire went, it had a slow leak. When I went back to take it to have it fixed, they were out of business. And they stuck me $48 plus tax to do an oil change and a grease job on this Escalade. I said, go ahead, change your oil. It's up on a rack. They didn't know how to get that 26-inch tire off. I said, good God, get an angle grinder and cut it.
Uh-huh.
And they finally cut the tire, a bunch of pieces to get it off.
An angle, angle grinder and you said to get an ankle grinder, cut it off.
Mangled?
Sounds like you're releasing a prisoner. Here's my thing. It's like, you know, the city. All right, this is a basic biological principle, and that's why. Well, I like to mix topics around on the show. We have to have politicians on so people have a chance to interact with them. But I like to have kind of a mixed topic so that we can understand life better and have a more enjoyable show. But biology teaches you, you're either growing or you're dying, right? You either have some level of growth, replacement of cells, et cetera, or the organism's dying. This town could die, you know?
Well, it was dead. Well, I wouldn't say it was dead, but it was comfortable living before White Sands opened up in the 40s, in the late 40s, when it started expanding. And they brought the V2 rockets in here and started growing. The majority of the people work at White Sands. I would hate to see them lose their jobs. I know what it does to a city. I was flying out of Roswell. I was in SAC, and we moved every 3 months. They closed Walker Air Force Base. Roswell turned into a ghost town. A good friend of mine and his brother bought 50 homes from airmen that knew they were never going to go back. Mm-hmm. That would happen to Las Cruces. Mm. I would hate to see that.
Well, so look, we've got to, there is, keep it in biological or health terms, the fact that we have so many empty buildings is a sign of our health. It's like you go into the doctor, you're covered with spots, you have a fever, your hair's falling out. Those are signs that you're not healthy. And so what is the city, you know, for Mayor Ken to get up and say, we're doing well, we need to head in the right direction, when this, you know, I mean, that's why I think it's important for people to run for reasons other than, hey, look at me, I'm the governor or the mayor. I might apply to the governor too, but whoever is in office has to put the people first. It's got to be a campaign about ideas, you know. There's got to be, your ideas need to upgrade what's going on.
You're correct there. You can't, well, you shouldn't hold a town down like Old Mesilla. I remember when Old Mesilla, well, you know, I've been around 80 years plus, and I remember Old Mesilla, and Old Mesilla is pretty much still the same. It hasn't changed much around the kiosk and all that. There's no business extending other than the kiosk.
Well, you, Elizabeth,
I wouldn't want to live there.
When you go down there, it's kind of cool, the adobe houses, and you know, you drive out and there's farms and houses, and it really gives you a sense of the old New Mexico. But I mean, this town is not Old Mesilla, but we've got to, I mean, I just think that good politics is based upon having if you go into office, you have to be committed to the people. You have to be committed to ideas and upgrading things. And the PVA might have a lot of great people in it, but that's politics of the past. Marxism didn't work out, and we found that out a long time ago.
Well, Kelly, you're right in a lot of things, but you know, as the city grows bigger and bigger, it becomes like Albuquerque, number three in crime. And like I said, I don't know if you're familiar with New York City on 20th and 9th. And a lot of people say, well, that's Manhattan. I said, no, you don't know what the heck you're talking about. That's Chelsea.
Oh, yeah. Art.
Chelsea. And it was within walking distance to the beach. And let me tell you, we walked up there about 1 o'clock in the morning, filthy, dirty, like you cannot imagine. And there were some apartment complexes on the right-hand side as you approached it. And they were identical to the apartments that are over here on Spruce or a Picacho. It's before it goes to Spruce, right across from the cushion queue. Even the guardrail was painted the same color, dark brown. And let me tell you, even the East Hamptons, which is the home where I was staying with some friends, was $1.5 million.
Uh-huh.
Let me tell you, here in Cruces, it wouldn't even sell for $300,000.
Yeah, well, I mean, obviously, you know, where you live, for example, if you live in San Francisco, if you had a cardboard shack, you could sell it for $100,000. But anyway, I got to take a break here. Anything else?
No, Kelly, keep up the good work and hope you succeed in whatever it is you're trying to do. But please, Kelly, don't bring any fly by nights. Okay.
All right. No, man. I'm not going to do any oil changes in the parking lot. Thank you. All right, folks. All right. So to sum up my point here, there was something special about Ronald Reagan, and I know we can't go back to the past, but the idea of being upbeat and friendly and having a better idea, to me, that's what politics is about. I mean, grow up in a house where we put flyers or chase people down and talk to them. It was more of one of the things that was in the air was politics. So one of the things that we talked about, but I really think that we can do better in this city. And, you know, groups like the PVA, that's not, you know, just let's be totally honest here. You might have an idea and you might think that you're the smartest person since, Isaac Newton. Your idea, do a little historical study. If your idea has been tried and failed, move on. You know, Marx and Engels and all of these guys, they tried their ideas. Their ideas were tried. They failed. So we need to move on from that in this valley. Talk about living in the past, you know. Anyway, Kelly O'Connor, 627, we'll be back. All right, so I had seen this article, and I had saved it, but I'm trying to see where I saved it. It's, I use for show prep is something called Google Drive. And Google Drive is, you know, it's an online, I guess, cloud-based, it's kind of a suite of a word processor and stuff like that. So I do my show preparation at home a couple hours every night at least, and then I can open it up here in the studio. So, but anyway, I read this article that was pretty interesting. In the upshot, the point of the article was that PC movement has peaked, and I thought it was pretty interesting. And so I see some reflection of this kind of ongoing struggle. I think the political correctness movement hit, maybe it was in the 70s, I don't know. Certainly by the 80s, political correctness is gaining. If you do some historical study, political correctness comes out of what is called the Frankfurt School. The Frankfurt School was this group of professors that were in danger of getting slaughtered by Hitler because they were communists, and you know, Nazism, the national socialist party over in Germany, and the communist movement, which comes out of Germany, is basically fighting for the same piece of land. And so Hitler comes to power. There's not really that much difference between fascism and communism. The one difference is the market. In fascism, the government controls the market by telling businesses that are already established what to do, what they can do and what they can't do. They pick winners and losers. And that's why when people talk about what's happening in American economics now, they'll talk about corporate fascism as the government gives its blessing to a business. That business is much more likely to succeed. But in any event, communism ultimately is the, people mix in the term Marxism for communism, which is incorrect. Marx is a theorist. Marxism is a political economic movement that has never really existed, but at least that's what we're told. But it's if you apply Marx's ideas to the nth degree, you come up with a propertyless society. So the government would then own all property, so the government would run the business. So what you have is, and you've seen this to a certain extent in the Obama regime, is you have people who are rewarded for being political players, not for competence in any particular arena. And then those people, because the party in communism, the most important thing is the party. The party is the end all be all. And that's why in these communist regimes, you see that they're lawless and they're very violent places, because the party takes over what would be a constitution, what would be a Bill of Rights, which should be rule of law. There was no law in the USSR other than what the government decided the law was on any particular day. So, but in any event, you've got this, it's kind of this fight between Marxism, fascism and Marxism. Fascism is much more successful because it allows the people who built up businesses or who are running businesses to continue on as long as they cooperate with the government. Marxism is in communism totally pie in the sky. And what happens is you put people in charge of businesses that don't have any business experience, and then that business totally collapses. But it doesn't matter if you're in a communist country, because the government becomes the economy. So anyway, I'm not trying to confuse anybody here, just trying to throw some stuff out there. But in any event, out of this struggle between communism and fascism, which the fascist one in Germany, then these communist people are looking to avoid getting killed. So this group of intellectuals comes over to America, comes over to New York. I think they go to Columbia University, but they established the Frankfurt School because they were from Frankfurt, Germany, and they were communists. And so they come up, they realize, they kind of have this come to Jesus moment where they realize communism is not going to take over the world the way that Marx said that they would, which is the workers of the world unite, throw off your chains. You know, Marx is using this kind of poetic revolutionary language. And so they decide, you know, it's because communism and Marxism is not fit for the world that we live in. But Marxism comes out of basically the Industrial Revolution. And once most people are not working in factories, the kind of the formula and the outline of it don't fit anymore. But that doesn't stop the people from trying to apply it. So in any event, they decide that what they're going to do is take over the world through other means, which is really turns out to be the media and the education system, because they know that if you inculcate or if you educate people at a young age of what's right and wrong, and you put it into socialist terms or into socialist Marx or whatever you want to say, that those people will adhere to those beliefs just like a religion. And funny enough, the belief system is so similar to a religion that it kind of takes the place of it. So political correctness comes out of this Frankfurt School when they try to come up with ways to apply Marxism or socialism, leftism, progressivism, whatever you want to call it, into the university system. And so that's why you've had this kind of generation after generation of people that are coming up with these, you know, passionate, deeply rooted, impossible to dissuade individuals who then get into power, like the president, like so many other people who get in, and they have the fervor of an evangelist. And what they're evangelizing is, though, is this socialistic, you know, view. And anyway, that is why our society is basically caught in these, I guess you'd call it paroxysms, this kind of struggle, this bloody struggle or bloodless struggle over control of the society, and who gets to rewrite the dictionary, and who gets to put out the values to the left. It's a battle to the death. We've got a call. Thanks for the call, the Kelly O'Connell Show. Who's this?
Yeah, sir. You good morning, Kelly. How you doing?
Good, man. What's up?
Yeah, I'm just listening. You know, I, once again, I agree with you. There'll be a time and where I disagree with you, but it's not very, very often. But you know, like I said, I'm 62 years old. And I'll tell you something. I'm seeing more of this leftist and PC thing going on. And I got to tell you, my feeling is that they're so adamant. You know, the left is so adamant about their belief. They remind me really, I'm not a psychologist, but they remind me of a brat who, you know, if you disagree with them, they're going to hold their breath till they turn red.
Yeah.
And just, you know, collapse.
Yeah.
And this kind of attitude about the progressive left and BC, it's killing the nation. It's killing the nation. Just like what you said about earlier about the empty stores. We're an unhealthy community. Unhealthy.
Yeah, we absolutely are. We absolutely are. And it's very sad when you see people's futures are poured down the toilet. It, you know, I I feel a certain amount of compassion for people that are leftists, although they spend all their time looking down at the people who don't agree with them and scoffing at them and thinking what, how, you know, they're basically, if you're a leftist, you're trained to see anybody who doesn't agree with you, to see anybody as a peasant or like a, somebody living in a tribe, you know, you're in the middle of Borneo if you're not a leftist. But I feel sorry for them because they're in a box. They can't think their way out of it, and they have no ability really to defend themselves in a debate. They can't make historical arguments because the history is all against them. And that's why it is so similar to a cult, you know?
It is.
But anyway, Sergio.
You, sometimes I feel like they have this very hostile sense of entitlement.
Yeah, that's true. That's true. Listen, Sergio, call back, but I got to take a break here. Thanks a lot. We'll folks be right back. A little behind on the ads.
Now.
Kind of speaking, talking about this stuff, there's looks like an editorial on complaining about the special interest group that came in from Hobbs to influence the election. I mean, what do people think the PVA is? Progressive Voter Alliance, is that supposed to be a homegrown movement? If the PVA is a naturally occurring thing that, you know, is not from the outside, then why do the candidates who run for them seem to be brought in from the outside? I mean, the question answers itself. So Mr. Eichmann was living somewhere else a couple of years ago, from what I understand. And if you found out that he was asked to move here to run for office, would you be shocked? I mean, after Wayne Hancock, who got up and said that the population had doubled since 2007. I mean, so if you get people come in from another part of the country and those people don't know the county, right? So who influences their vote? I mean, if they're associated with the PVA does. But I mean, I don't see how this pack from Hobbs, I mean, at least it's from the state, is necessarily an evil thing. But in any event, these ideas, these progressive ideas, they came from the past. They belong in the past. And now the progressive movement itself is different. And so we tend to lump socialist, communist, Marxist, progressive, leftism, all of these terms together. The progressive movement comes out, it's an American movement that starts in the late 1800s, say about 1890, and goes into maybe... I think it ends by 1917, but it is the source of an enormous amount of influence, and we still carry it with us today. And if you look at the history of it, like so many of the things in Marxism, if you understood that Marxism was a heresy of Christianity, would you be totally shocked? Well, you probably would be, because it outlaws religion, right? So how could it be? But, you know, let me think about this. Heretical movements a lot of times go after and punish anybody who doesn't agree with them, that doesn't support them. There's another argument out there that Islam is a heretical Christian or Jewish movement. And if you disagree with them, you know what happens. But the progressive movement has an evangelical fervor to it. If you go back into the history of it, you'll see that it comes out of the this kind of transcendental Unitarian history that we have in America, where Christianity becomes less specific on the Bible, but more about religion and spirituality and everything. And then it just kind of transforms into this progressive movement where you're trying to make society better. And you're going to do that through the law. So there have been some phenomenal things that have come out of it, like the park system. But now we see the park system is misused. That movement is misused to take away our land in the Oregon Mountains. You see that things like the FDA, Food and Drug, we didn't have that. That's a result of the progressive movement. A lot of great changes, labor laws and everything. But at some point, these movements kind of become malignant, you know? So anyway, got a little behind on our ad. So here's a little weather for you. We'll be right back. 6:48, Kelly O'Connell Show. Just maybe a little philosophically minded after this last election. But we'll be back. It's 6:53, and real nice outside. A little bit cold last night, of course. A little bit cold last night, but my AccuWeather application on my phone says it's 38 degrees outside. That's pretty dang cold. All right, so I was telling you about this kind of exciting thing. An article that comes out of the National Review. Sorry, social justice warriors, political correctness has peaked. Now, I read this and I thought it was interesting. And how it starts off, if you're a social justice warrior, in other words, if you're fighting for political correctness and that type of thing, you're a liar. You actively spread absurd falsehoods about the nature of men, women, sex, and culture that cannot withstand even the slightest scrutiny. You change history and conceal facts to fit your preferred narratives, even when it costs human lives. You claim the best of intentions, yet achieve the worst of outcomes. And through it all, you hate the very nation and political system that have granted you the liberties you so grotesquely abuse. And then they have this funny clip that comes, I think, out of University of Washington or whatever, in which these kids are lecturing other kids. Well, here, let me play a little of this. It's so ridiculous. It's got to make you laugh. What is cultural appropriation? In other words, taking somebody else's culture.
Hey, Huskies. So we at ASUW and other organizations want to talk with you about something you might have heard or seen before on campus, which is cultural appropriation. We want everyone to have a good Halloween, but definitely not at the expense of others. So to give a basic definition, cultural appropriation is when you take something from a culture that isn't yours and basically use it for your own purposes. And a lot of times, this involves members of the majority culture taking bits and pieces of a minority culture in a way that trivializes it, in a way that misrepresents it and pulls it out of context, or in a way that stereotypes other people. And this, of course, is definitely harmful. And we as Huskies have a commitment to other Huskies to making sure that this doesn't happen on our campus.
In other words, it's up to you to not make anybody else feel uncomfortable. Got it? And you're at the university, right?
Greetings. It is the year 2015. If you still think it's acceptable to mock the culture and traditions of a group that you do not belong to, then go ahead. As long as you're comfortable relegating thousands of years of history into a joke or costume.
When you paint your face or entire body with brown and black tape, attempting to portray a black person or black culture, you're participating in a legacy that contributed to the proliferation of stereotypes such as the happy-go-lucky darky on the plantation, the dandified coon, or what's most popular today, the thug on the street corner selling meat.
So anyway, you've got this ridiculous group of kids who are trying to tell other people, they're trying to give them instruction in how not to be offensive. And as you've probably already figured this out, there's no end into how you can offend other people. So there's no end to the extent that you should train yourself to not be offensive. I mean, so, you know, if you want to wonder, if you're wondering why we've gotten in such a terrible state in this culture where everybody's stepping on eggshells all the time, you know, and but one little group is dictating to other people what, not only how they talk but and act, but what they believe in. You know, think about that. So there's this story that is come up about this LGBT, lesbian, gay, bisexual, transgender measure that came up in Houston. Now, Houston has a lesbian, is I think the first lesbian mayor of a major city. And right after she got into office, she started, I can't remember what happened. Somebody complained about a pastor's message. And so she threatened to go and get all of the messages of the churches in Houston and check them for homophobia. Now, that didn't go over too well, as you can imagine. I mean, you know, Houston's like 5 million people, but that is the mentality there. Now we see that they had a law that they tried to bring into Houston to stop anti-LGBT, and it failed. And so I'm starting to see a pushback across the culture, and part of it is exemplified in representative in Trump, but and also in Dr. Carson. But you see a widespread movement to push back against PC, but it's going to be a very, very long battle and lonely struggle for some people. But these people that have gotten this power through just claiming that other people are insensitive, that's an enormous amount of power without much cost. Those people are going to fight to the death to keep that power. But I think that there's change afoot. And that's one reason that, you know, there's a lot of people, some of the people who are actually are openly politically correct, are deep down, are just jumping up and down inside when they hear Trump talk, or they see that this law is failing in Houston, because they understand that they've been under this kind of this cultural fascism. This is basically dictated to them what they've been allowed to say and not say. It's thought control. And they understand that is people naturally want liberty. It's the absence of liberty. And Americans understand if we continue to go in that direction, we will lose all of our liberty eventually. We'll talk after the break. Thanks for listening in. We'll be back after the break.
Thank you.
It's 7:06. Today is the 5th of November. And I've got kind of a weird story I wanted to sneak in here before I forget to tell you about it. There's two parts of this very, very weird story. The first one is kind of, it's hard to believe. Some kid got into a wreck and his car rolled and he somehow was thrown up onto a sign, a freeway sign in California. That is weird. And he died. He was dead. He was up laying on a overpass sign or a freeway sign, like 20 feet up in the air. That's weird. The next part that I tell you about, you're not going to believe. But anyway, here's this story out of California.
Yeah, this is one I've never seen before, and I hope I never see one like this again. You look over across the freeway here. This is right where the 5 and the 134 freeways come together. A person was involved in a single car accident. You see a little compact car back there. It's badly smashed up. This happened around 7 o'clock this morning. One car only. The driver of that car ejected up into a freeway sign overhead. You can see at the end of that ladder where that freeway sign is, they've got the body of the driver covered with a sheet. Exactly how this happened or how what caused it to happen, we don't know. We don't have much information about that. You can only surmise that the driver was not wearing a seatbelt. Now, the horrific task that somebody from the fire department or coroner's office has to climb up that ladder and retrieve that body from the freeway sign. So a person ejected quite a distance up into the air. The body ends up on this freeway sign. The sign says Colorado exit 3/4 mile away. They've got a couple of lanes closed here on the right-hand side. And then somebody's got this horrific job to do. We'll send it back to you in the studio.
Incredible story, right? But it doesn't end there. They maybe should leave it up there as a testimony, the importance of wearing your seatbelt. But this story is even more incredible. And all right, so this is basically Glendale, I guess, around LA. And this is from November the 3rd. So this is just like two days ago. Now, the same guy, the kid that died, Richard Pananian, 20 years old. He died last Friday. He was in a Ford Fiesta. They thought it was a Prius, but it turned out to be a Ford Fiesta, which is not a well-protected car to begin with. But he did not have a seatbelt on. But here's the bizarre thing. A lamb was sacrificed in a ceremony to protect a Burbank man 5 days before he died in a bizarre crash on the Golden State Freeway. I-5, if you've ever driven up the West Coast. That's a freeway you use. His body was found several feet up in the air, but we're talking like 20 or 30 feet up in the air, to be honest, on the ledge of the Colorado street sign. Pronounced dead, ejected after he rolled several times, not wearing a seatbelt. The family considered it ironic, Pananian's death, because they had performed a sacrifice for him Sunday in which his cousin, Armin Kardashian, but not, I assume, not part of the Kardashian clan, he sees writes on this online tribute, a week ago today on 10/25, the family had done what is called a matag, or a lamb sacrifice for Richard to protect him from harm and evil, Kardashian wrote. In the Armenian culture, sacrifices are done when someone escapes death, as Richard's life was once spared. I find it ironic that 5 days after this offering to God, not only did God choose to take this young man's life, but decided to make such a spectacle of it. So anyway, I thought that was bizarre. All right, so I've got a couple of things that I wanted to get into that, you know, we've kind of been holding off talking about anything but politics. And I hope you guys enjoyed the people that we did have on and the courage it took. And, you know, the people that didn't come on, maybe next time they will have learned their lesson, despite what the Tea Party or the head of the Tea Party apparently is blaming me in part for the defeat. But I've got a couple of stories that are kind of related to, so I see a lot of the misery in America happening as related to the, some of the things that we were talking about, which was this heretical Christian movement called liberalism, that if I could kind of go back and explain to you where it came from, which a lot of people probably wouldn't really give a rat's hind quarter for, but a large influence on the liberal movement of today comes from a guy by the name of Comte, Auguste Comte, who was a student in Paris, and he flipped out. He went bananas after he got married. I guess married life didn't suit him, but he was put in a clinic for a couple of years. And when he came out, he was never cured, but he did a lot of writing and such. And he wanted to create a secular religion. And this is something that John Stuart Mill, who's also an extremely important intellectual, he also was working on this. And so what we have out of liberalism is, to a large extent, this secular religion. So anyway, we've got a call. Thanks for the call to the Kelly O'Connell Show. Who's this?
Jerry. Hi, Kelly.
Good morning.
Hey, I think you did a real good job last 2 weeks with the thing. And yes, I am a member of the Tea Party, and I'm please going to ask you not to blame the whole Tea Party.
Oh, I won't.
For one person's comments.
All right,
comments.
So
I know Bev, and she's just got a little bit too emotional over
Lavos
because she cares about Las Cruces.
I understand, but I mean, Bev, got on the show and claimed that I was trying to keep her off the show. I mean, I've had her on the show many times. I mean, she's on the air complaining how I'm trying to keep her off the air. I mean, it's just, there should be
right,
some,
but Kelly,
some, you know.
Kelly, also, Bev did put out some information to keep your whole show on,
well,
and they
true.
Wanted to change over to Glenn Beck at 7 a.m.
That's true. So I'm not.
She did support you.
That's true. But anyway, I don't feel like it's my fault. I'm sorry.
I would suggest.
Pardon me. Don't let me interrupt you. Go ahead.
I would suggest that we both, all of us, do the same thing that Abraham Lincoln did, and we hold no malice towards anyone, even though we lost, or the Tea Party did not represent themselves as they should be, to not hold malice towards that, because that only creates more friction than smoother roads.
That's fine. Okay, thanks a lot, man. I really appreciate it. God bless the Tea Party. Have a good day. All right, folks, take a little break here. And all right, so I guess the message is, take no prisoners. Don't take hostages. Let's have an armistice. Here's the greatest album ever, the greatest jazz album ever created, supposedly, Miles Davis, Kind of Blue. Kelly O'Connell, by the way, if you ever have a party, you don't know anything about jazz, trust me, go get a copy of this album, Kind of Blue, and play it during that party, and you'll find people really enjoying themselves. Anyway, 7:15, we'll be right back. I've got some stuff to tell you about how this secular religion liberalism has filtered into society and changed our way of seeing the world in a very, some ways, very evil ways, very, very misleading ways. We'll be right back. Okay, so I was telling you, kind of in filling you in on this stuff that's been out in the media, the speculation that PC has peaked, politically correct movement, the idea that some other group of people with whom you totally disagree on almost everything is going to decide what you can and can't say, or what you can and can't believe. The most ludicrous idea in history, and it's been downloaded, it's been put into the DNA of university students to the point where you have this mindless, you heard that, if you're listening earlier, the clip from Washington University, University of Washington, the Huskies, and they're giving a speech on how not to offend other people. Think about that. I mean, the university is the time when you're supposed to challenge all your beliefs and, you know, get educated and learn how to think. But now it's when you get inculcated. People used to try to avoid getting propagandized. Now they're reveling in it. They're seeking it. So anyway, here is the politically correct movement, or the liberal movement, has brought in, has kind of created their own religion, and the scientific wing of their religion includes global warming. So here's a clip from Senator Cruz that kind of illustrates what I'm trying to get at.
You know, the last debate, it was interesting, Glenn. Jake Tapper asked a couple of the candidates on there, are you a climate change skeptic? And for whatever reason, they were afraid to answer yes. And then they sort of bobbed and weaved on that question. I tried to jump in. I said, Jake, you want a skeptic? I'm right here. You know, just a couple of weeks ago in the Senate, I chaired a hearing where the president of the Sierra Club testified. Mm-hmm. And we had an exchange where I simply asked him about the data, and he couldn't answer the most basic question, starting with the fact.
It was startling.
He couldn't answer the most basic fact that for the last 18 years, the satellite data showed no significant
Correct.
Warming whatsoever.
Correct.
He had no idea about that. He turned to his aides every minute or two. And, you know, part of the reason he didn't know the facts, because climate change is not science. It's religion. Look at the language where they call you a denier. Denier is not the language of science. Look, I'm the child of two scientists. My parents are both mathematicians, computer programmers. My dad was a self-taught geophysicist. The essence of the scientific method to start with a hypothesis and then look to evidence to disprove the hypothesis. You're not trying to prove it. You're trying to disprove it. Any good scientist is a skeptic. If he's not, he or she should not be a scientist. But yet the language of the global warming alarmists, denier, is the language of religion. It's heretic. You are a blasphemer. The response from the Sierra Club, we have decreed this is the answer. You must accept it. And so he didn't know his facts because he just knew his religion.
All right. So the best way to understand liberalism is to understand movement. And one of the reasons that I say that is because, if you'll notice, it is quite typical, although not unique, but it is quite typical for people who are very liberal to not be religious in the traditional sense, but to be wildly enthusiastic about their politics, and their politics takes the place of religion. Now, this is not by accident, because like I was telling you, this crazy guy, Auguste Comte, who came up with positivism, this movement called positivism, that it sought to bring in into the culture a secular religion that was based on science. Now, I was going to tell you how this has affected the world. It's so pervasive, you can't see it sometimes, you know. The guy that came up with the idea of peak oil was named Hubbard, L. King Hubbard or something like that. And he was a person who was not doing what Cruz was talking about, which was coming up with a theory and trying to disprove it. He was a member of a group called the Technocrats. And the Technocrats were around the time of, I think, the first, second world war, whatever. The movement basically petered out, but they believed that you should dress in these uniforms. And I think the fact that fascism was kind of growing at the time, and the uniforms of the Nazis and everything, was bad timing for the Technocrats. But what this guy, L. King Hubbard, believed was that the people that run everything, once again, should be scientists. Now, the chief of scientists should be, according to him, a geologist. Why? Because the most important things in human life are found underneath the surface of the ground, like oil and gold and uranium and stuff like that. Iron. So he came up with this theory that if you read through his theory, and I just happen to have written an article on this, and a couple of years ago, and it was right before fracking got huge. And so it was good timing on my part. But basically, this guy was in this movement, technocrat, and the technocrats wanted to change the economic unit into energy units. So it was a super, super scientific movement, but it was ultimately based on what else? Marxism. And so when he said that we were going to peak on oil and then there was going to be a collapse, and that's been an extremely famous and influential idea that is not supported by science, the real science. And they had, you know, there's only so many political ideas. That's one thing that should make you enthusiastic and more confident in your beliefs, in your if you ever debate anybody, talk to anybody, there's only so many, you know, political beliefs out there. There's very few, actually. And we happen to live under one, the theory of constitutionalism that puts together the democratic one vote, one person concept and republicanism, which is that power is diffused through many different institutions. That's our form of government under the rule of law. You've got the liberal movement, which I've been talking about, but this peak oil has had an enormous impact on society, and to a great degree, it has been negative. It has been misleading. It's based on misleading science. All right. So now, related to this in some sense, because it comes out of the same worldview, is that we're here alone. There's no God. All we have is our political ideas to save ourselves. Only are we running out of oil and energy, which is basically Malthusianism. This Malthus guy, once again, a long disproved theory from the 1700s or 1800s. Reverend Malthus, who said that we're running out of food. We're going to starve in the next, whatever it was, 50, 20 years. Has that proven to be true? No. But it's still probably the most pervasively influential idea in leftism in terms of science, in terms of, you know. So you've got global warming. Now, let's come back and talk about that. But, well, speaking of the weather, I got a little clip here from the Weather Channel for you before we go to break.
So you just clicked on a video about severe weather. Why on earth are you seeing a video of snow? That's because it's the same storm system that produced this snow in parts of the West and the Rockies. That's the Grand Canyon, by the way. Flagstaff, Arizona, saw a pretty decent amount of snow as well. That same storm system is going to be creating a pretty good amount of severe weather in the central part of the country today. So let's time it out for you, show you who's under the gun. And by the way, most of the severe storms will likely start during the afternoon. But Dallas is a big city that's in play today, and that's where really the heart of the severe threat's going to be, even though it's actually kind of a large area where we could see a couple of severe thunderstorms. That includes the Midwest as well. And it's also going to include parts of the Mississippi River Valley close to Memphis, especially as we get into the overnight. So watch out for that. But throughout the daytime hours in the afternoon, Tulsa, Dallas, all the way up into the Midwest, the area of particular concern is central and northeast Texas, where we could see a couple of isolated tornadoes. And we've got to watch out for flooding, because that's video from about a week and a half ago. The ground is soaked. That's close to Dallas. And the ground really can't take much more. So flash flooding could be an issue. Some of these spots could see 3 to 5 inches, and that would be enough to cause flooding.
So we've had an enormous amount of water come down in Texas. And, of course, anybody who's liberal, has any liberal inklings and half a brain, is going to inform you that it's related to global warming. Let's come back and talk about that. 728. Kelly O'Connell. And I've got a little local news for you, but first some Miles Davis. Greatest party album ever. Kind of Blue. All right, so you've got this. I'm just going to use global warming as an application of this kind of this, what I mentioned, Malthus, this idea that the world is on the verge of collapse, which has been a very, very popular idea in liberalism and has continues to come back up in different forms. It's now coming up in the form of global warming. We're cooking ourselves to death. But it has, once this collapses, it'll come back in another form, but we've got to call. Thanks for the call to Kelly O'Connell Show. All right, call back if I missed you. All right, so global warming, they've got some evidence that NASA is reporting, and there is an article out there that Arctic, and I'll have to find it to remember if it was Antarctic or okay, here we go. And this is from the UK Express, which is pretty interesting. But it's one of the claims of global warming is that the glaciers are melting, right? Remember the president flew up and he did this press conference next to this glacier and just see how this glacier has shrunk back a mile or whatever it was. And it's shrinking 10, 20 feet a year, 5 feet a day, whatever it was. All right. The UK Express had this article talking about a report put out by NASA, and I can't get this stupid thing to open up, but the upshot of it is that there is so much more Arctic or Antarctic, I'm trying to remember. Okay, Antarctic ice is increasing so much by 135 billion tons, British tons, T-O-N-N-E-S, a year, says NASA, that it's making up for all of the so-called shrinking glaciers. So we're worried about glaciers that are shrinking. The glaciers are shrinking down. They're melting. The water's running off. It's going into the ocean. The ocean is rising. And we've had people call up and talk about that. Takashi has called up and talked about that. And it's in the news all the time. Thanks. All right. Somebody keeps calling and hanging up. So maybe it's a global warming person who's terrified the truth's going to come out. But anyway, so this is a new study. This is published November the 2nd. So this is just a couple of days old. There's so much ice coming into the Antarctic that it's making up all of the slack of all whatever they claim is melting out of these glaciers. So anyway, we are finding, one more time here. Anybody there? Hello?
Good morning, Kelly. Good morning. Good morning.
Takashi, I hope I didn't wake you up.
Hey, now I'm wondering whoever wrote that article. I'd like to pose a quick question, man.
Go ahead.
Should the Inuits and all the polar bears move to the Antarctic now?
Yes. Yes, we need a government program. We need the government to pay for it.
maybe a sequester or something, man. I mean, I watched a program the other night on TV with the Inuits up there in the Arctic.
Yeah.
And they were talking about a lot of that stuff, man. The hunting, how they're not able to hunt anymore. Because a lot of the animals who live up there, they don't even come there anymore, man, because there's nowhere for them to nest and all that.
Well, I mean, if there was ice melting in one part of the world and it was being added somewhere else, does that mean we're suffering from global warming, or is it a local phenomenon?
It definitely dictates climate change somehow, Kelly, because especially when the track record doesn't say that.
Let me ask you something. Yeah. Let me ask you something. So they go down into, and I'm trying to remember where this was. Well, they found something out at Elephant Butte. I think they found a mastodon or something. And they found them in the Grand Canyon. They find mastodons and woolly mammoths all over the place where there's no ice. So
Kelly, let me just say this, not to cut you off. Remember, the Earth was connected at one point before the ice ages, before the that period of the ice age, the melting, the great melting.
All right.
Everything was connected at one point.
I think it was called the flood, but go ahead.
No, I'm saying after the ice age, the planet was connected.
Did
everything,
you know,
all the land masses.
Did you know that there is there is evidence that there was a worldwide flood? Every ancient culture that they've studied has a flood narrative in it, and there's a lot of evidence that there has been massive flooding. For example, talking about land masses getting disconnected, what separated Britain from continental Europe was a massive flood. They've now proved that.
Yeah, well, that's a possibility. You know, I figure every a certain amount of years, there's a reset on the planet. So maybe that's what we're going through right now, Kelly.
Well, let's not worry about global warming if it's just reset time, reboot time.
You know what I wanted to say, Kelly? You mentioned these scientists.
I'm afraid to ask.
My question about these scientists is, most of their funding comes from the government.
Yeah.
And a lot of times, these inventions that the scientists come out with, civilians like me and you, Kelly, don't get access to it like 20 years later. You think there's a possibility that they might know and we won't get access till 20 years later when they're on the Elysium ship or something?
I think that a lot of these scientists that are on the government getting funding from all of this stuff related to the climate know that there's no global warming and they don't care. They want to have a job and they want to feed their families.
Well, that's also a possibility, Kelly. But like I said, based on the track record of these scientists, they usually keep the information and release it to us after the fact.
That's true. That's true. But I gotta get back to the topic. Thank you. All right. So what's the topic? Anyway, the topic here is that there's evidence that's coming out all the time that global warming is a hoax. Now, there is other evidence you could point to if you're a global warming person to suggest that there is some global warming. So there's although a lot of that is falsified, but misinterpreted, whatever. But let's just say there's a debate in the scientific community over this. But in the media, we're being constantly inundated with this propaganda that the Earth is warming up. But occasionally there's little breakthroughs in the surface of the propaganda when information comes out of places like NASA, and then there's evidence there, and it's coming out all the time. But ice has been growing in the Antarctic more than in recorded history, but we have to listen to all of the propaganda, how the sea is rising at the same time. You've got to learn how to think. We have to learn how to think to work our way through the claims and the propaganda. Thanks for the call to the Kelly O'Connor Show. Who's this?
This is Valerie.
Morning.
I just want to mention I was listening to NPR
over
the weekend. Let me turn my radio down. And they were interviewing farmers up in Alaska that are now having record yields of potatoes and cabbages and everything because certain areas in Alaska are not freezing as hard as they were.
Right. My sister,
climate change.
Valerie, can you hear me?
Yes.
All right. So, I agree with that. But my sister, I was just going to squeeze in there that my sister lives up there and was telling me about this incredible, this how warm it's been. I'm sure my sister believes in 100% global warming, but how do you interpret this?
Interpret what?
What's going on?
I just think it's natural for the Earth to go through lots of changes. I mean, weather changes all the time. I am a former resident of New Orleans, and after Katrina, which brought us here, but anyway, there were many climate people saying that was just the beginning of hundreds of hurricanes that were going to stalk the Gulf Coast for the next couple of years.
Right.
There was one lone voice in Florida that kept saying, no, Katrina and Rita did exactly what nature intended. It took all the heat out of the Gulf, and consequently, we're not going to have very many hurricanes.
Right. Well, there
hasn't. 10 years, no hurricanes.
There hasn't been a hurricane in years. But I stayed down at St. Charles in New Orleans to do a judicial campaign. But thanks for the call. Have a great day. Glad you're in the city. Glad you're here. Thanks for the call. The Kelly O'Connor Show. Who's this?
Jerry. Round two. Kelly.
Round two. Go for it.
Hey, the Greenland is a nation over there that's in the Atlantic area. And when the explorers, Leif Erikson and those, came over at that time, it was also habitable to where they can grow gardens and raise crops and such like that. Currently, it is under snow. So it's not the humans that are causing global warming. It's not created by humans.
Uh-huh.
Now, there is a high-pressure system that has been stationary in the northern Pacific off the coast of Oregon and Washington and Western Canada that is causing this drought in
California. But that's also causing the temperatures to rise in Alaska. And that's been there a long time. That's why we're getting a lot of more rain currently these last year.
It's a combination. Thanks for the call, Jerry. All right. It's a combination of the blob, what they call the blob. There's this 300-foot-deep, 1,000-mile-long blob off the coast of the northwest of warm water. And then you've got El Nino, and Jerry's absolutely right. Okay, so let's take a little break here, and I'm going to come back and do my next application of the evils or dangers of liberalism. God bless all the liberals that are listening in, by the way. 743 Kelly O'Connell Show, AM Los Angeles, 1450 KOBE, 523-1450. We'll be back to talk about the next application. Oh, trust me on this, and we do have a call, but I'm going to go to break. I'll take the call off the air. Hold on just a second. Yeah, who is this?
Kelly, it's Kathy. So I'm just wondering if you guys who don't support the fact or the belief that global warming is happening, do you really think that the 7 billion people on the planet aren't changing it in some way?
Maybe. I mean, I don't know. I mean,
you just think it's natural?
No, whether
that all this has happened in the last 100 years of the Industrial Revolution.
How much real science do we have before that? I mean,
lots. Come on, Kelly, you can take ice samples out of the Arctic that go back thousands and millions of years. You can see what's happening on the planet, and most of the devastation has happened in the last 150 years.
Is there any falsification in science?
I'm sure. There's quite a bit on both sides. I'm sure there's quite a bit, like you said, to get the money. But beyond that, I truly believe it's happening. It doesn't matter to me that you guys don't, but it's happening, and eventually people in the future will pay the price.
Kathy,
I mean, there'll be 13 billion of us instead of 7.
Kathy, let me ask you this. The something comes along like this study from NASA that we're getting more ice in the Antarctic than we're losing anywhere else. What do you think about that?
We're getting more ice in the Antarctic. You know, it's my understanding that the planet is defrosting, in a defrost mode because of the population.
Kathy, I understand that you believe that, and I know that idea has been floating around. That's the basic statement of global warming, but NASA came out 2 days ago with a report that we're getting more ice in the Antarctic than we're burning off anywhere else. So here's my question. Do the people that support the idea of global warming, are they able to take in new facts or not?
I think they are, Kelly. I mean, I think most people are pretty open-minded. I'm willing to look at both sides. I mean, I would like it not to be happening. I would truly hope you guys are right. I just totally hope you're right.
You want to say
but
something?
I believe it's happening. No, I don't. Anyhow, I know you're busy.
Thank you.
Anyhow.
Have a great day.
Thanks. Bye.
Bye-bye. All right, so we just got a call from Kathy, and she said that basically, if I can sum up her point, that the earth is defrosting. And I said, well, what are you willing to accept new information? And she said, I do like to listen to both sides, and I hope you guys are right. So anyway, some people are open-minded out there. All right, here is my next application of the dangers of liberalism. You have got a situation in Germany, and there's this beautiful, and by the way, anybody, you ever get a chance, and I know there's a big chance out there, you can pick it up at Starbucks. The New York Times is a beautiful, beautiful newspaper. Now, there's a lot of stuff in there that I disagree with, but there's a writing style that is characteristic of the New York Times that is basically, in newspapers, unparalleled. The writing style is, at its best, impartial. It's well-written. It's just phenomenal. I used to read the paper quite a bit, and then it seemed to get more to the left. I read it in college, but it is just extremely well written from a style perspective. There's an article in there, a mass migration crisis, and it may get worse. Okay, all right. So here is my next that under the headline of the dangers of liberalism, we are accepting in America, which is not nearly what's going on in Europe. We're accepting a lot of illegal immigrants into America. Now, this is going to change America. But remember, if you're upset that they're getting a lot of illegals out of Mexico or Central America or whatever, we have a basic culture. It's a Christian culture. It goes back to Europe. It goes back to Spain and the Catholic Church or whatever. There are cultural totems or landmarks that all of these people coming in are going to have some interest in Christianity, whether it's Catholic or Protestant, and the similar ideas about the family, et cetera, et cetera. So to the extent that America is going to be changed, it's going to be along the lines of Europe in one form or another, you know, and it may be colonial Europe, whatever you want to call, you know, South America or whatever, Central America. But got a situation in Europe where you're getting millions of Muslims coming in. And the most surprising part of this whole thing is that Europe is just throwing its doors open under this liberal theory that we have to take these people in a humanitarian thing. All right, here's what I think is dangerous and what I think is wrong-headed about this. Number one, there's a limit to how many new people can come in, especially new people that don't, by definition, have jobs, and they don't have places to live, and they don't have food and clothing. There's a practical limit to that. Everybody knows that. There is, on the other hand, the danger, the extraordinary danger, that these people have a much more vigorous and possibly even violent interpretation of culture and religion, and that all of the things that have been built up, and don't forget, Europe has been built up over 2,000 years, and we're living off the fruit of that buildup in here in America, as they do in Australia and New Zealand, etc. We didn't go through all of the struggles, the 30 years war, the 100 years war, the battle between the church and, you know, the Protestants and the Catholics and everything, and the Crusades and everything. All of these things that we didn't go through, we just are living off the fruit of it. We don't have a institutional memory here of all that. Now, there's a report that just came out that Germany is on the verge of anarchy and civil war because they're basically taking in millions of people. Now they're doing it. Why? In the liberal name of humanitarianism. Now, as I had talked before and mentioned in front of Walt, and Walt reacted to this, the idea of charity is exclusively in history, and I've spent a year of my life studying this and writing on it, is exclusively out of the Bible people, the Christians and the Jews. Historically, this is indisputable. Now, if you take that idea and transplant it into liberalism, which is, to a large extent, liberalism is the claim that charity is really philosophically in, you know, humanism. It's humanistic, and they have appropriated it, but they've done it in a blind way. So that's why you see the welfare state boiling over and creating more poverty than it solves, and creating generations and generations of desperately unhappy and unproductive people in the welfare system. Now, you're taking these same misconceptions about human nature and history and society, and you're washing all of these people in. Yeah, you might say, well, what are we supposed to do, Kelly? I mean, we've got all these refugees in the Muslim countries. We have to take them in. And the fact of the matter is, obviously, we don't have to take them in, because some of these European countries have just plugged their border, so none of these people are coming in. The leader of one of the countries has said these, you know, Christianity is a cultural artifact of, Europe is a cultural artifact of Christianity. We cannot take these people in and keep our identity. The left, the people are going to say, it's evolution. We're going to evolve anyway. Let's do it. Let's get it over with. And basically what you're going to do is sacrifice constitutionalism, the rule of law, the Bill of Rights, religious freedom, and freedom of speech. Because in all of these countries where they're taking these people in, they're already stopping their Christian expressions of Christmas and Easter. And, you know, the Muslims in one country just recently invaded a church and burned the altar and tore down the crucifix and everything. That's what's going on. That is another attack of liberalism against our way of life. All right, so we'll come back and finish up with this idea, but it's very concerning, and I'll read you a few headlines. Kelly O'Connell Show, AM Las Cruces, 1450 KOBE, 523-1450, and we'll be right back to finish up. Let me ask you this. Just think about it. I'm not going to get into it right now. But Western Europe has, since about the 1500s, Western Europe has dominated the world in terms of ideas and breakthroughs. And in so many different ways, science comes out of Western Europe, approximately in the 17th century. Political theory, advanced modern political theory that all people accept now, comes out of, you know, constitutionalism and all this. Capitalism comes out of Western Europe. It's not a very big area, to be totally honest. It's completely dominated the world since then in terms of all of these various ways of approaching life, and has made life so much better. And now, according to the New York Times, there are more displaced people and refugees than any other time in recorded history, 60 million in all. They are in March in numbers not seen since World War II, coming not just from Syria, but from Afghanistan, Iraq, Gaza, et cetera, and from Sub-Saharan and Northern Africa. And one-third of the refugees coming into America now, according to the Drudge, I think are from Africa. Maybe it's more than that. In any event, my point is, you're going to take all of these people and force them into Europe. What if Europe is blotted out in terms of what it used to believe? Does that matter? Doesn't Angela Merkel, when we have to take these people in, doesn't she have any sense of responsibility for the culture, for the history, for the mores, the folkways, the beliefs, the law? They're bringing in 750 Muslims into a small town of 102 people, a German village. It's a 700% population hike. And what do you think is going to happen to that village? You think they're going to celebrate Christmas this year? Think about it. Just wanted to bring that up to you. Hope you have a good day. We'll pick up this topic sometime in the future. Kelly O'Connell Show, AM Las Cruces, 1450 KOBE. And meet you back in 22 hours. Ciao.